Tupperware is a household name. You bring it to parties, lend it to family, and hope it gets returned to you. Might be the one kind of plastic storage you actually care if you get it back, like Kramer here in this clip from Seinfeld after giving some leftovers to a man on the street.
Hey, man. Did you enjoy the food?
Yes, I did. Where did the Chinese learn to cook like that?
Listen, I'll take that Tupperware now. I don't think so.
That's not... You gave it to me.
No, look, I didn't say you could keep it. See, I don't give away Tupperware.
Well, you should have said something.
Well, I didn't think I had to. Look, with a piece of Tupperware, you just assume.
Yeah! So what is it about Tupperware that made a mainstream brand, made it a mainstream brand for so long, especially when there are a lot of different plastic storage options? You can join in at 800-642-1234. Is this brand, the Tupperware in your kitchen, special to you? Does it hold family memories? Have you ever been to or hosted a Tupperware party? You can join in at 800-642-1234. Marcia Bryant is a professor of English and distinguished teaching scholar at the University of Florida. She's taught classes on domestic life in the 1950s, and she co-teaches a class on the impact of materials on society. She wrote an article for The Conversation called From Slag to Swag, The Story of Earl Tupper's Fantastic Plastics. Marcia, thanks a lot for joining us.
You're quite welcome, and thanks for having me.
Well, your piece solved one question I had, where Tupperware got its name. It was made by a guy named Tupper.
It was indeed, and like Kramer says, it's something people just don't want to let go of. So,
what made Tupperware so special?
Well, I think that's a good question. I think a couple of things. First, I think it's really cool. If you look at it, it's pretty. It has nice shapes, and it actually ended up in the museum first. So people like to look at it. And then people like to use it. It's functional. It fits in your refrigerator, your kitchen. I mean, my family never sold it, but I'm kind of addicted to having it now. So it's pretty, and you can do things with it.
Now, this Earl Tupper, he's working for DuPont, and they're trying to figure out, all right, we've got all this plastic waste and slag. And so what does he do? How does he figure out what to do with it?
Well, couple of things, I think. First of all, he was a self-educated person. So I think part of why he could figure out what he might want to do with it is he read a lot. He read a lot of literature. He went to trade fairs. He talked a lot to women. He asked women in kitchens, how could your life be easier? So when he started working at the DuPont affiliate, they would let sample makers take stuff home. And so he wanted to change the look of it, and he wanted to put it in the kitchen. So I thought that was a cool thing DuPont did. So it kind of let people have their way with innovation.
And did I read this right? He actually was heating it up on his stove to mold it?
They let you take stuff from work home. He did. He had his son help him. It sort of became a men's kitchen project, you might say. And, he decided he would take the pots and play with them himself.
I don't know if history recorded this, but I once accidentally melted a Tupperware lid. His kitchen must have smelled horrible, right?
Oh, I imagine. I'm actually cringing just thinking of that.
It's not good. So he ends up with these projects, with these lids that stay on, but... you write that American housekeepers were not necessarily ready to put their faith in plastic. How did he try to overcome that?
He had to make it look better. It had to not look cheap. And I think part of the good design, why it started off in a museum helped a lot. But also, people were using glass jars to store things. I don't know. I make bread. I use mason jars. But sometimes those lids were out. And so he had to have something that didn't crunch up. Something that, I don't know, like if you made dressing, if you wanted to put vinegar in it, the plastic wouldn't start to break down. He figured out if it could be functional, it looked good, and you could make the lids tight, then you could say, you know what, it costs a little more, but it saves you money. So plastic was no longer cheap.
Talking to Marcia Bryant, professor at the University of Florida, about the history of Tupperware and how it went from a project, melting plastic on the stove, to a thing used in everybody's kitchens just about. A big part of this success story was a woman by the name of Brownie Wise, which is a heck of a name. Can you tell us about her and her part in the Tupperware story?
She had a huge part in this story. I mean, I think it would probably be frustrating if you're Earl Tupper and you know you've got a great product, but you can't sell it. So she had a lot of hardships up in Detroit. She had a son with a lot of health problems. Her husband had left her. And so she was a door-to-door saleswoman. And she saw some of this poly tea, that used to be called poly tea products. And she could see that, first of all, this is really different. And secondly, if you can put it in a woman's hands, she'll probably buy it. So she... Yeah, she sort of transformed gender roles for a lot of women in the 50s.
And at the state of the art, you mentioned the glass jars as an option, but also people were storing food by wrapping tin foil around it or aluminum foil, which is one way to do it. Or, I didn't know this, buying shower caps to be food caps, too.
Yeah, if you lose your mason jar lids or something, you could put a shower cap over a jar, but, you know, not such a good thing. So, and you don't want your toddler to get a hold of that.
True, true. And when people say Tupperware, people think of Tupperware parties. Can you talk about how that became such a big way of spreading this new product?
Yeah, I don't know if you guys have looked at the PBS Tupperware film, but yeah, I was just reviewing that because I often teach about the 50s. But yeah, so what happened was Brownie figured out you need direct sales. And at the time, women of different social classes, there was a pressure that, you know, the man had to be the breadwinner. You couldn't make the husband feel he didn't have what my mother called provider. You know, father is the provider. And so through a Tupperware party, you know, you could be femme, you were housewife, you were a hostess, and that was a role women were supposed to have. But you could also be a businesswoman. And so the party was a way to give lonely women stuck, you know, with childcare all day, which can be delightful, I will say. But it kind of gave women, when cars were pretty expensive, most families couldn't have two, and so they could have socialization, they could make a little extra money, they got to make their kitchens more functional and make friends. So yeah, it became a socially acceptable way for mostly white women, but also African-American women, women in cities, rural areas, and emergent suburbia. So it kind of created this new way a woman could be and be socially acceptable.
Yeah, you taught a class called Desperate Domesticity, the American 1950s. How does Tupperware itself fit into, I guess, this new definition of what it was to be the woman homemaker at home that evolved in the post-war years?
Oh, lots of ways. I have to give a shout out, please, to Desperate Housewives, which is, of course, why I named the course Desperate Domesticity. If you think about my favorite character on that show, Brie Vandekamp, how she comes and she holds those baskets, right, with the gingham napkins. So I think in this Desperate Domesticity, Tupperware created a new aesthetic for the kitchen, right? And so it kind of helped women come up with something to do and something to show off. And you could make your cabinets look like an art gallery. I mean, I wish my cabinets looked as nice as rows of Tupperware in these ads.
Right. You mentioned the design and the look of Tupperware was maybe as big a part of its success as the function of it.
Yeah. And that going back to that, you know, dude kitchen experiment. I'm not sure if Marie Tupper let Earl use the pots after that. But so what he was able to figure out is you could make it translucent, you could make it opaque, and he wanted to make it different colors. So I think if you've seen, like I'm now holding a lovely violet Tupperware Eco water bottle. I've got vintage Tupperware around me that people give me because they know I teach Tupperware, and they actually get it from estate sales. I don't know what I'll do with all this Tupperware. Some Tupperware is shiny, some is translucent, bright colors, pastel colors. I think people talk about the 50s being a housewife as a drudgery. I don't know that that's true. Women in the 50s, a lot more complicated than people like to assume. But I feel like the kitchen certainly became more colorful. And the shapes were pretty varied and I think vivid.
Is Tupperware one of those products like Kleenex or Xerox copying machines where maybe they're a victim of their own success, their brand name became the universal name for the type of product?
I think, oh, that's really a good question. I think yes and no. Okay, so as you can probably tell, listeners, I'm Southern. And so in the Southeast United States, we don't say sneakers. We'd say, you know, tennis shoes, even if it's not for tennis. We say Kleenex, even if it's Puffs, right? Coke can mean a non-Coca-Cola product. But I don't think Tupperware does that. You know, you're just getting me to think about this. I don't hear people call it my plasticware. I've seen people take offense if someone says, I don't want to disparage other brands. So if someone says, hey, I got this plastic product at, you know, this store, and they call it Tupperware, anyone that has Tupperware will say, oh, no, that's not Tupperware. So, yeah, I mean, I guess that's a pretty distinctive marketing coup in and of itself. It doesn't stretch its meanings like, say, the word Kleenex. You know, when I lived in Illinois, the word was tissue. But yeah, even down south, Tupperware is Tupperware, and no other plastic can be Tupperware. How did it do that? That's pretty cool. So.
We'll leave it there, Marcia. Thanks a lot for joining us today.
Oh, I really appreciate it. You're quite welcome, and thanks for having me.
Marcia Bryant is a professor of English and distinguished teaching scholar at the University of Florida. We've been talking about a piece she wrote for The Conversation called From Slag to Swag, The Story of Earl Tupper's Fantastic Plastics.